We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This season, all your favorites have one home for the holidays. Yours with Disney Plus.
Merry Christmas!
Moana, Woody, Buzz, Captain Marvel, Darth Vader, and Homer will all be there, so make room. Make Disney Plus your home for the holidays, streaming Disney, Pixar, Marvel, Star Wars, Nat Geo, and 30 seasons of The Simpsons. That's something to celebrate.
Merry Christmas to you!
All these and more now streaming. Go to DisneyPlus.com to sign up now.
Welcome to the Barcelona Podcast, episode 160. I'm Missing Opinions, brought to you by the most influential voices in the FC Barcelona community. I'm Dan Hilton, and I am joined for show number 160 by Francesc Tomàs. Francesc, it's the international break. How could we possibly have anything to talk about?
No, nothing happens in the international break because Barcelona don't play. That's the end of the show. Thank you. Goodbye.
Wait. Before people leave, we do have actually a bunch of things that we don't get to talk to when there are actual matches on. So today we are talking about things like Victor Valdez being pushed out, the electronic vote being voted down, and then some other broader stroke topics as well. Then we're going to get some into the nitty-gritty today. I want to thank our Facebook group. We didn't actually ask for questions this week because we just wanted to go over some of these big topics that we don't usually have time to go over. And for next week as well, I want to let people know that I have some stuff, fancy stuff planned for that as well, that's related more to the bigger ideas and international break stuff than it is necessarily match in, match out. So, Francesc, you ready to go?
Let's do this, man. I'm just delighted we're not talking about some Neymar signing or some weird thing that we seem to get involved when there's no matches. So this is actually going to be very good. Let's do it.
Yeah, I agree. And one of the reasons we're not talking about Neymar is because instead we start with the guy that I'm glad that they kept instead of signing Neymar, and that is Ousmane Dembele. And we're basically asking, is Ousmane Dembele the key to Barcelona's success? And this isn't just a knee-jerk reaction because of Barcelona's performance against Sevilla with Dembele and Artur Vidal in the lineup instead of Antoine Griezmann and Sergio Busquets. I think it's just a broader idea to how polarizing Dembele is. And that really should be more the question than whether or not he's the key to Barcelona's success. It's whether or not he really is that difference maker. And I go into this with my gut reaction saying, yes, he is that difference maker. For all the negativity that people pour upon him, Barcelona's results with him, and even last season when he was rescuing some points, he certainly is that transcendent kind of player that, because of all his injuries and inconsistency and now a red card, he's just never been able to put enough matches together to iron everything out. But boy, I think is he the difference maker here for Barca.
He is. He's someone who can make a difference. We said that all summer, to be fair. I was one that wanted Neymar to return, but I also didn't want Dembele to leave us either. I think that they're both special players. Just talking about Dembele himself, he drives me nuts. You know, he drives me crazy in both sort of sides of the world as well. I think the negative for me actually overpowers the positive half the time because I'm just so frustrated that someone that plays professionally for Barca can be so, I think the word is clumsy. He's not even careless. I think he's just clumsy with his final touch, his final pass. Obviously, it was better in the last match, but overall there's always that he's gonna mess it up now, he's done all that greatly, but no, that's gonna be a mistake now sort of thing. And I think for me, until all of that is ironed out, he's not going to be the total player. But can he make a difference? Of course he can. You know, he's by far the fastest player that we've signed in recent years. He's someone who is brave. He can pretty much dribble anybody. And on a good day, he's fantastic. I just hope that, you know, his final product was a little bit better, like we started to see in the last match. But not just on a one-match situation, but consistently week in, week out.
Yeah, Barcelona didn't dominate Sevilla. While they did on the scoreline, certainly Sevilla could have been up by a few goals before that breakthrough when Barca scored those three goals in 8 minutes. But that said, even his individual stats from that game, I think any negativity that could be brought on Barcelona for that match and why it took them so long to get into it, I don't think necessarily goes on the shoulders of Dembele. I mean, we saw that Messi grew as the match went on, right? He looked like he's regaining his match fitness. And Dembele, speaking of which, also doesn't have much continuity in match fitness, as we talked about this year. But look at the stats from that game. And again, this is not a knock on Messi. This is a pro-Dembele argument from me. Dembele, 2 shots, 84% passing success, 3 completed dribbles, and he was dispossessed on 3 occasions. Messi, 6 shots to Dembele's 2. He had 85 passing success over Dembele's 84 passing success. So that means that Messi completed about 1 or 2 more passes than Dembele. The difference here, Messi had 10 successful dribbles to Dembele's 3, and Messi was dispossessed twice instead of the 3 times by Dembele. And that's actually the important thing I want to note here, is that Messi was dispossessed twice, and both of those times came in the middle of the field that led to Sevilla counterattacks, right? And the argument here is that that seems to be the game plan, right? That seems to be with the direct style that Valverde has, you know, has tried to cultivate a little bit. It's not necessarily just running behind the defense and recycling and recycling and recycling. It is a little more direct at times when they're trusting the ball at the feet of Messi or Dembele to run it oppositions and to unbalance things, and then wait for that pass outlet once the numerical advantage has occurred. And so for me, Messi, I mean, it's not, again, a knock on him that he was dispossessed. That's the job of the opposition, and Barcelona still winds up winning 4-0. But Dembele, that's the only negative thing to me is not that he's dispossessed, and I think this is the big argument, is that it's the locations in which he's dispossessed, because just like Messi, he was dispossessed more in the center of the field. And I think the frustration that also comes from Dembele is because of his speed, right? He's the one who gets by that first line. He almost always beats his first defender, right? It's an incredible thing to see. He almost gets by one or two every time. And now, because Barcelona have the numerical advantage, it's much more clear to us where the ball needed to go and where he didn't deliver it, right? That he's created this opportunity. He's put himself in an advantageous position, but because he's unable to find that final ball or find that pass or know exactly when he needs to lay that ball off, we get to see it clear as day where the missed opportunity winds up being with him.
Yeah, and that's frustrating a bit because he should see it as well. But yeah. I totally agree with you in terms of the fact that he's an annihilator. He gets away from the first defender every single time. He is someone who is brave. He goes to the corner and he's able to associate with those around him. But the thing is, I think he needs to be more consistent. But, you know, coming back to your point about where they are dispossessed, I think that every striker and certainly winger, so every forward at Barca, needs to try and make superiorities, needs to try and beat someone, whether it's with a 1-2, whether creating spaces, whether sort of running behind people's back, which is sort of Suarez's speciality since he joined us back in 2015. I think everyone's got their own skills, and I'm not really too bothered about sort of where in the pitch they get dispossessed, because there's going to be at least one layer, if you want to call it that, of midfielders behind. Normally it would be Busquets or whoever's playing in that position. And then you still got the fullbacks and the center backs as well. So I think that we need to, in the final third, we need people who can unbalance. And that's what Dembele brings, and that's what Messi brings, and that's what Ansu Fati brings as well. That's what Suarez brings. So I'm just happy that they're trying it on. That's the job.
Yeah, I also want to mention that for me, just passing the eye test, the combination of partnership, and now we saw on the left side with Nelson Semedo filling in at left back for the injured Jordi Alba, that Nelson Semedo has, you know, the, in my money, for against Sevilla, the best performance he's ever had in a Barcelona shirt. And yep. That combination and partnership between Dembele and Nelson Semedo, just looks better than every other combination. Whether Carlos Perez and Semedo had one good performance, I don't remember the exact game, but they had one good performance together. But, you know, Antoine Griezmann in front of Nelson Semedo, as Semedo was kind of getting acclimated to that left-back position, just wasn't the same thing. And it does, you know, make me wonder, and you think about the feeling of when you head to the bench and watching your team succeed. It's one of the most difficult things, I think, particularly, again, this is just, if you're playing in a Sunday league, you're wondering, you know, oh, is my team, why are they playing so well without me? What does this mean for my future? Antoine Griezmann is sat for the very first time of the season, and Barcelona do well in this way that even Arturo Vidal, also the first time he stepped in the starting lineup for Busquets, and they also play pretty well and dominate Sevilla. But all that said, I'm not sure if that changes the big picture here, right? Like, I think when push comes to shove in those big matches, at the moment, it's still Griezmann, Suarez, Messi, and it seems like Griezmann is not going to be, unless it comes in the next, on the other side of the international break, it looks like the game plan right now is to have Suarez be the number nine, and then Griezmann and Dembele be rotating as that left wing.
Possibly, but the thing is Dembele doesn't even give himself a chance because he gets sent off. Fair enough. Mateu Laoz is let's just say an adjective that I cannot really say on air.
Yeah, we gotta keep that clean rating, Frances. So we can't talk about Laoz.
Yeah,
we gotta keep him off the show.
Everyone listening to this, I'm sure, has got their own adjective for our lovely referee Mateu Laoz. But anyway, it's self-inflicted. You know, obviously the referee wants to be the star of the show, and he always is. After the game, he's in different memes all over the world, and he must have felt so happy in his bed, you know, counting his chickens and going through Twitter seeing himself, because that's definitely what he seems to love so much. He's just all about himself. But forget about the referee, because that's what he wants us to do, to talk about him. I think Dembele's reaction wasn't the best, and he's been sent off, and now Ole came out this afternoon. He's going to be banned for El Clásico, so that's two games in which he's actually going to miss. And based on his performance against Sevilla, you would have thought that he would be able to regain and retain his fitness and actually keep his spot. But no, something else happens. So that's what I'll go back to all the time with Dembele, is consistency. Griezmann, I know that I'm probably in the minority here. I think Griezmann has done fairly well in terms of adaptation. He's definitely not there yet, but obviously he's playing out of position. Arguably his best is a striker, but there's someone else that has been trusted there. And I also think that his work rate, he's especially defensively, he's doing everything the coach is asking him to do. And I think that's a positive. Obviously, things are not working for him just now. And he's got not just Dembele, but also Fati behind, and to you know, with a push, even Carles Perez ready there as well. So he needs to work for his place in order to regain it. But the thing is, Dembele just gave it back to him in a plate.
Yeah, it's funny. Somebody put on Twitter a few weeks ago that the Double Pivot podcast with Mike Goodman, who's been on our show in years past, they analytically looked at Antoine Griezmann at Barcelona, and you know, they basically said it's been an atrocity. And then you and I here on our show, we look at it with more of the eye test even. Now, I'll look at the advanced metrics, but again, for Griezmann, so much of what he does in terms of his effort and what he does defensively, because that doesn't show up in the advanced metrics, even on a heat map, it doesn't really tell you what kind of passing length he's cutting down. Some of, again, the advanced defensive game plan that he's enacting, that Valverde has put forth, it makes it difficult to look at him analytically. And as I said, too, I think the biggest key for me, even almost reversing this one, isn't necessarily even Dembele and what he changes as being, you know, as we like to call the wild card here. But if Griezmann can figure out a way, and he hasn't, again, had any time to, if he finds a partnership with Suarez and Messi, and that trio becomes the trident that they're expected to be, because this will take time. Messi played his first 90 minutes of the season, so it's going to take a little bit of time for Griezmann to get accustomed to those two. In the same way that every time Dembele comes back, you look at the trio of Suarez, Messi, and now Dembele, and after being together now for now 2 years, that Dembele is finally found his feet alongside those two, and it's going to take a little bit of time for Griezmann to do that just the same. So I think that'll wrap up that topic, but for the rest of our show, we're going to be answering a question from Rick without really giving an answer, because there's really no answer to this, but it's a rhetorical question that we're going to have a bunch of different topics related to. Who truly knows what's best for this club? Board members, coaches, players, retired legends, fans, or socios? or podcast host, Frances. So we're going to hope that it's the last answer, podcast host. And we're going to start by discussing the electronic vote situation that occurred last week at the regular meeting. Now, the backstory behind this, Victor Font, that's the name to know here, announced himself as a candidate for the presidency in June of 2018 for the election in the summer of 2021. All the way back in May of 2015 was when you would have first heard about him, presented his plan for FC Barcelona that was heard by some. And this electronic vote, obviously it is exactly what it sounds like. It would allow socios to vote electronically, and about 5,000 socios had signed the proposal for voting electronically. However, the electronic vote did not pass. It needed two-thirds of the vote from socios that were in attendance there at the meeting with Jose Bartomeu and company. It had 359 votes for, 173 votes against, and 67 abstained. And so, doing all that math here, they got 359 of the 417 required votes, so therefore there will be no electronic voting at the 2021 elections. Frances, you know, again, we stay out of politics, but as far as this kind of thing, the club politics, would you have been a yay or a nay on this one?
I would have gone for it, of course. Everything that is moving things on and making process more modern and transparent should be celebrated, so I would definitely have voted for yes. Having said that, back to your sort of original question in terms of who knows best for the club. Well, all of us, you know, Barca is a club that is plural, like we say in Spanish. It belongs to everyone. It isn't owned by some sort of billionaire person that tells us all what to do. It is a community. It's a community that these days is worldwide, obviously, because of the origins of the club and where the club sort of was 50, 60 years ago. It is a democracy in terms of the sources. The club members are the ones that vote and decide. I do know, obviously, that it's hard for people from outside Barcelona and Spain and Catalonia to vote and have their say. I do know that the club makes it very hard for people to maintain their membership card. So, for example, you need to travel to Catalonia in order to renew your club membership carnet, so your actual card. I think it's every single year if you want to keep it. So that's very impractical for a lot of people. So they don't make it easy. But then again, that is what the sources themselves have decided to do. It's not a club that sort of was created yesterday morning. It is a club that's going for 120 years. And, you know, there's things that are ingrained that have always been like that. And the sources are the ones that have the power at the moment because that's how the club works. And they have got the rules and regulations. I think for a vote to pass two-thirds to have to agree, I think that's a bit much. But that's what has been decided and that's what their statutes say. So it's in a democracy, you need to go by what the democracy says. And if the people with the right to vote have decided that should stay as it is or haven't voted against it, put it that way, then it's how it needs to stay, whether we like it or not.
Yeah, there's always such big things at play here where there might be decisions to be made. And the way that obviously we on the outside of things speak about money related to the club, again, because it's not our money, it does seem like this just never-ending well of cash. But in the same respect, it is funny that I think fans in the modern era, they speak about their clubs fiscally, right? That what makes me so uncomfortable about Coutinho coming the first time was just the sheer amount of money it cost for a player that might not have succeeded. And it's obviously in hindsight that Coutinho not doing well and now doing great at Bayern Munich, you know, it makes that look even worse that that kind of money was spent. And again, that for me, that was the biggest thing that made me uncomfortable at Neymar, that if I feel like a guy like Neymar handcuffs the team for years and years and years, and production of one player, if it's not Lionel Messi, the production of one player shouldn't be making or breaking your team. But then you have those guys that are those pieces like a Frankie de Jong, and you say, okay, well, how much is a player like that worth to be brought into the club? Same thing with Artur was got at a bargain, but what if Barcelona doesn't scout him for another year and now you have all that competition? How much would Artur have been worth at the time? And that's just the players coming in, but there's so many other things at play, whether it's sponsorships, and that's really where the money comes from. And for Barcelona, you know, how much do we know about the relationship between Rakuten with all the different other sponsors? All we knew that we could hang our hat on for all those years was the relationship with UNICEF. But even then, you can go on UNICEF and you about on the internet and read a ton of negative stuff about UNICEF. So there is so much at play here that not just electronic vote, but I just mean at these kind of meetings that with those on the outside, you don't really understand nuance, right? And I think what I'll sum that up by saying who truly doesn't know best for the club is basically Twitter and the entire world at large, where it does take to understand this club, it does take week in and week out. And this isn't a us patting, I mean, it's not me patting us on the back for credibility, but, you know, Frances, you and I are involved in what's going on with this club day in and day out. And yet I believe that, you know, most of the board members know best. And it's the same thing we say about Valverde. Well, Valverde might not know best because a lot of people have different opinions of him. But at the end of the day, if he wins a Champions League trophy, we're not going to pat ourselves on the back. That's Ernesto Valverde, who would have made those decisions to get himself there. Same thing, the players win it, you know, not us. So then for those who care about the product and understand what's happening behind the scenes, you know, retired legends, that's what we're going to talk about on the other side of the break, actually, and what kind of effect they have on the team. So we're going to hit the ad break and be back in just a second. All right, so thankfully during that ad break, nothing big happened. There was an interview that Messi gave about wanting to leave because of all the tax situation that was going on. That was happening while he was also getting injured back around the Tata Martino era that we all try to forget. Anyway, we're still back from the ad break, and Messi's still at the club, so that's great. But one guy who's not is another guy who won the Champions League with him, and that is Victor Valdez. Frances, what a roller coaster here. What a story. And this is one of those where, with Patrick Kluivert being the head of Barcelona's academy, it seems to be those two locking horns in a really negative way. And it seems like, how do I say this? It seems as if Kool-Aids are almost being forced to pick sides, but I don't see how you don't just go with the Barcelona Academy director in Patrick Kluivert and stick with the club and say that Victor Valdez pushed the lines. But in the same way, Valdez, in his few short months in charge of the Juvenil Oz, he brought up some concerning topics, right? I think that's what it is, that he brought up some troubling things about the club, yet he was still in the wrong and was probably going to be on his way out anyway.
It's a complicated one. It is a complicated one. And the thing is, we've got the experience of knowing Valdez as a player. I actually knew him before he started playing for the first team, sort of growing up. And I remember, because obviously my brother was at La Masia at the time, with Andres Iniesta, and Iniesta was very close to Valdez. And out of a lot of players growing up, you know how in La Masia you need to be a particular way in terms of humble, in terms of you know, not thinking too highly of yourself. Valdez was different, man. Like, I remember him walking around La Masia like he owned the place, which in a way probably he did at the time, going to see matches where Andres was playing and my brother was playing. And you know, he always had this aura of being superior to people, sort of thing. Obviously, he grew up throughout the years. He was very successful for us. He was a crucial key. He was amazing for us for many years. He was probably the ideal Barca goalkeeper until, obviously, Ter Stegen is there now. So arguably, you know, there's a debate there to be had in the future, once Ter Stegen retires. But he always had an aura of being difficult, sort of thing, or loving himself way too much. Mm-hmm. Obviously, very, very outspoken as well. And that was reflected in the way he left the club. You know, obviously, he told us he was leaving, I think it was 18 months before his contract was up, something absurd. And that unsettled. I was working for ESPN at the time, so I remember writing about this. And he basically told us way too early. So he left a gap in the goal that obviously Zubizarreta, in hindsight, covered really well with Claudio Bravo and definitely Ter Stegen as well. But he was one of the captains and there was no need to do that. It was as if he was putting himself before the club, sort of thing, in order to secure a great contract. Fast forward, I think it was probably 12, 15 months, and he had it all done for Monaco, which, to be honest, was a weird choice because out of all the clubs in Europe he could have gone to, basically he could have picked pretty much anything and anywhere, he went for the one that gave him the most money. And then, unfortunately for all of us, but definitely for him, he got injured on the last game at the Camp Nou after a corner, sort of picking up a ball in the air and landing very awkwardly. And long story short, he was gone from football for the next two, three, I would say years even. And he was never the same again. But He then went and disappeared from the spotlight. He didn't want to speak to anyone. And, you know, he's sort of a... it's sort of an awkward way to go from everything to nothing. But then again, everyone is different. So I was really surprised when the club actually came back with the news that Valdés was rejoining again. I mean, he did his coaching bits and pieces, his degree. I think he was in the same class as Xavi and Raúl at the time. And, you know, I would have never thought that he would come back to Barca, definitely not so early and definitely not with the current board. He was working in Madrid. I can't remember the exact team, probably Majadahonda or something like that. And then Barca, he was in the Juveniles there and he was signing for Barca Juvenil. I thought it was a weird choice. But then again, he's a club legend, so we give him the benefit. And, you know, everything that I hear from my friends, from the press and the environment in Barcelona is that it's actually been quite difficult. We know that in La Masia, you always, you know, for the last 20, 25 years, you stick for the 4-3-3 formation. And that's what the expectation is. And to be honest, I'm with the board and with Clover in saying, this is what we asked you to do. This is what the job is. This is what you need to do. And I do know that in La Masia, because I've lived it, you know, my family have lived it, my brother have lived it. In La Masia, there are certain players that are prioritized because they have got that spark and they've got that sort of long-term trust. So, for example, Iniesta had it, Jorge Troiteiro had it, Andreu, can't remember his surname, but in my brother's team at the time, they were trusted more than the others because the coaches had seen something on them. So Valdés didn't want to obey by that either. And, you know, then he went public, he complained about not being able to use the playing field as a training pitch, which, you know, has never been done to my knowledge, in the history of La Masia. So there's a lot of disagreements. And, you know, he knew what the job was. He was at the club for, 20-25 years? So none of this would have come to him as a surprise. And, you know, if he negotiated, I wasn't there, obviously, but if he negotiated to come back to Barca and didn't speak out of those points and then he was surprised about those points, that's a bit bizarre to me.
Yeah, first, I do want to say Lee Roden had a good article about Victor Valdés and leaving the club and what you had talked about when he first left the club as a player. That's in TalkSport if you want to check that out. And yeah, I got images as you were speaking of Andres Iniesta being on the field when it was time for him to leave Barcelona and go to Japan. And so it wasn't necessarily that he was retiring being Iniesta, but he was moving on from Barcelona. And Valdés, who probably should have had maybe not a similar exit, Andres Iniesta really winds up just being that much more special, right? Class A. But Valdés, Dani Alves, there's that second crop in that generational group. And obviously I know that Valdés came from La Masia and Dani Alves didn't. And that's probably an argument that Valdés coming from La Masia probably should have been honored in a way that he wasn't. But clearly, obviously, he didn't put that take that to heart. And you mentioned a ton of different things that I want to give context on, Frances, here. We're going to start with that 4-4-2, 4-3-3, and you really did sum that up, that the issue, I think for me, the issue actually was not that Valdés was playing at 4-4-2, but that it was, you know, it's not the system straight from the lowest level in the academy to the first team like we talk about, where the counter argument to that is that Valverde had played a 4-4-2, that being Ernesto Valverde, had played a 4-4-2 in his first year before switching back to the 4-3-3. And so there is no promise that there's going to be continuity between the lowest level of the academy all the way to the first team. And it also brings up the point that what if the personnel on your team requires a different formation? And I want to remind people that Juvenil A squad, as we talk about, that's the generation with Pablo Moreno, who's now moved to Juventus, and Roberto Navarro, who's a Real Sociedad after being at Monaco. There's just a ton of talented players that wound up leaving who would, in theory, be in that Juvenil A squad this year. So what if Victor Valdés has personnel that fits the 4-4-2 better than the 4-4-3? Looking at the pragmatism of Barcelona, you know, we think back to Juan Ramon Riquelme, whose Barcelona career was dictated, as he was a guy who was played out of position at Barcelona. It was dictated by the belief that Louis van Gaal had in his system, remembering that van Gaal was brought in as a sort of return to the ideas that Barcelona had recently built their philosophy on under Johan Cruyff, right? And, van Gaal was supposed to be, you know, we're going back to Dutch total football 2.0, so Riquelme winds up playing out of position. And so that says, that's a counterargument, that Valdés was just trying to play what was going to get results and what was best for his personnel. But then we're going to go the counter argument, and for those, you know, understanding La Masia from the outside, even though that he's working with kids that are 17, 18, 19 years old, as a Juvenil A, that really is that final season before Barca B, that these players have to get ready to be full professionals when they're not, when they're still in La Masia and they're not playing professional matches with Barcelona B in that in the second or third division in Spain. So Valdez needs to continue to play that 4-3-3 and continue to push home and really finalize all of their education at La Masia. He's that final safeguard, being the Juvenil A coach before they go on to be professionals.
The La Masia system that basically Cruyff installed nearly 30 years ago now, it's all about creating players that have got a very specific skill and they've got a very specific understanding of the game, and they understand that position. Obviously, there's people like Sergio Roberto that can play anywhere, and that's the beauty of it. But they design number 10s, number 8s, number 4s, number 11s, number 3s, number 2s. So wherever you are in the scheme, for example, Xavi, I watched an interview with Xavi, probably 4-year-old interview the other day on YouTube, because I'm sad and that's what I do in my spare time, because I just wanted to see what he was saying and his understanding. And he touched on that. He said, when I came to the first team, I was a 4. I was a Guardiola. I was a 4. And everything I did in La Masia, it was to be like Guardiola. So there's people in La Masia now that want to be like Busquets. There's people in La Masia now that want to be like, probably would have been Neymar, or would have been Stoichkov, or would have been any of the wingers that La Masia have produced in terms of, I don't know, Pedro, for example. So they are very specific roles that we want to be specialists at. Obviously, it comes to a point, especially at first team level. I think even Barça B need to play the same way, to be honest. But at first team level, the coach has got all of the ingredients, all of the tools already sort of made, and then he can use them in whichever way he feels necessary. I still think the first team should be a 4-3-3, but that's probably maybe too traditional. But the thing is, the La Masia system produces players that are one of those specific numbers, and that has been going on for 20, 30 years. And with all due respect, I don't think a coach is more important than the idea. So if Victor Valdez isn't following, he needs to go. Sorry if that's a bit harsh, but the idea has to be above the names.
Yeah, and it wasn't just about the 4-3-3. I know this is the thing we've started with, but you also alluded to a bunch of the other minor transgressions, we'll call them, where he was upset for the lack of games for the Juvenil A at the new Estadio Johan Cruyff, which is the stadium of Barcelona B, who, by the way, do play a 4-3-3 under Pimienta, and the Barcelona Femení. He apparently skipped a coaches meeting. The first thing he ever did was he withdrew his team from the OTAN Cup, which is a youth tournament in Netherlands, citing that he didn't like the short rest periods between matches. He also was handed a UEFA sanction after his team showed up late in their home match, that being, and I want to reiterate that, the home match against Inter Milan in UEFA Youth League, for which he lost both of the Youth League games against Borussia Dortmund at Inter Milan, even though he's been undefeated in the league, in the U19 League in Spain. He still wound up losing both Youth League games. And that does bring up the question of, doesn't matter if you're winning matches or not at that level. The answer is still no, but in the same regard, at that age, as these players are 17, 18, 19 years old for the Juvenil A's, that you expect that for those players to be kind of ready for the first team, they probably are going to be winning most of their matches. And those things wind up going hand in hand. So it's not that results are the only thing that matters. It's fine if they wind up losing to Borussia Dortmund and Inter Milan. But the strength of La Masia is the fact that it's one of the best academies in the world. So there is almost a built-in expectation that they're going to be winning UEFA Youth League games.
Mm-hmm. And also the competition is not at the highest level in terms of, you know, having different ages playing. Because if you're in the under-19s, you're normally playing against 19-year-olds. Maybe you've got some 18s and 17-year-olds there, but that's a huge minority. Just one little pincelada, just one little point before we move on here. Barca doesn't just sort of focus on the skills of football, whether you are good at dribbling or passing, whatever. It's also about the image. It's also about the values. And it's also about the way that you portray yourself and you portray the club. Like, you know, say that tournament you said in the summer, he knew what the breaks were between the matches before he went to it. Mm-hmm. Or at least he should have known. You know, like if I enter a competition, I should read the rules before I enter it. You know, it's not that there's 7 days in a competition, by the sixth day I don't like the rules, so I quit. That's not something you should do. And that's not something that, you know, you should be leading a group of sort of wannabe world superstars. It's not the way to lead them. That's not a good example. You need to be a role model. And, you know, you can't have someone who's leading a group of youngsters, which, you know, they're 17, 18, 19 years old. They're still very influential. You can't just be, you know, whether you agree with the board or not, you can't just go public and say all of that, especially when, you know, you're coaching an under 19 team. This, you're not, you know, you're sackable. You know, you're not the first team coach. You're not on 10 million euros a year. I honestly think he messed it up for himself.
Yeah, I think really also the bout of profanity he had that got him kicked out of a match also isn't a good look as well. You talk about image. No. That's you make the headlines. That being Valdez, how many years do you go by without the common regular? Obviously, he's a legend. That comes with a name, but you know, in a case like this, you should just probably hear him sign up and say, "Oh, Victor Valdez is the coach of the Juvenil Oz," and for those fans who are not really paying attention so much to the Juvenil A or lower levels, now we do here on the show because we're hosting a podcast about it, but in the same respect, you would hear Valdez is signed up, he's now the manager, and then you hear, you know, give or take some matches, oh, he did well here, or this is this good thing about this, but in the first few months, the Juvenil A coach at a club should not be getting this much press, and if he is, it's probably negative press, and so that's where the you know, that profanity outrage was I think one of his worst transgressions. Again, it's setting a terrible example for what are still teenagers and what are still kids. And speaking of that, you alluded to another thing that I want to, the final point about Victor Valdez here. And I think what may have been one of the biggest causes to the final blowout that happened, what seemed to be the week before he was kicked out. There was a disagreement over the playing time of Iyash Mariba. Now, the backstory behind this, 16-year-old Iyash Mariba, who we have talked about aplenty on this pod before, he and Ansu Fati got their renewals this past year as they turned 16, while other players, you know, who we've mentioned before, including Xavi Simons, who went to PSG, Mariba and Fati are the two players in La Masia over the last 2-3 years that Barcelona have circled and said, this is our future. These are the future first teamers. We can't really spend money on everybody. And with all these young, you know, all these teenagers asking for a lot more money, we have to say no. We have to draw the line in the sand some way. But Mariba and Fati were given contracts that the Barcelona officials said, these guys have to be worth it. We have to budge a little bit, right? And so Mariba apparently was benched by Valdez. So he went to his parents, and then they went to the personnel, Kluivert, and they said that they had a problem with it. And then Kluivert obviously starts to reprimand Valdez. And now this brings up two arguments, right? And I think it's odd. It seems like everyone's agreeing, but there's still also this undertone of nobody's really right here, that we always believe that for Mariba, he just has to trust, for the player, for the teenager, you have to believe that they have to trust in the system and they have to trust with what works. And even if you are the top prospect in La Masia, because Fati right now is with the first team, even if you're one of the top prospects in La Masia, you have to just trust your coaches and believe in the system and be patient and all those different things here. But in the same regard, why would Valdez, it almost seems to be malpractice for a manager not to be playing his, to my money already, his best player, right? Like, why is his best player on the bench for what seems to be, it's not like a Messi reason when Valverde puts Messi on the bench and when Messi is sitting, but why is Valdez not playing his best player? It doesn't make, you know, it doesn't really make a lot of sense unless it is some kind of reasoning. And for that, Valdez didn't give a reason, like effort or being late to, it wasn't some kind of disciplinary thing or lesson to be learned. It just seemed like that was the idea tactically or personnel-wise that he had to bench his best player. But in the same regard, you know, it's not a defense of Mariba that his parents then had to go above Valdez's head and go to Kluivert and complain and make it into something more than it probably should have been, because this is the kind of situation that should have been handled in-house that we in the media should never have heard about. Honestly, we should never have heard about this kind of situation. It should have just happened behind the scenes, and yet here it is in 2019. This kind of information gets out, and it just looks like a black mark for everybody. It looks like Mariba's can't handle the pressure of being put on the bench, or he's just mentally not strong enough for that, and it makes Valdez look like he's just impractical and doesn't play his best player.
It's a mess. It really is a mess. I believe that players should only play if they deserve it, in terms of they earn it on training. I also believe that this is why it's a mess, because it's contradicting even what I'm going to say now. I think that winning doesn't really matter at juvenil level. But then again, Barça's juvenil, considering the power of acquisition that they have, the power of attraction they have for great players, they normally win most of the games anyway. And I think, long story cut short, you know, if he disagreed, he knows what that is. That's, and I'm going back to the same point, but you know what it works. You know what it is. You've experienced it. Probably he experienced it himself. He was one of the protected ones. I know that Andres certainly was. So not that he didn't deserve it, of course, but you know how it works. If you disagree with the board that much, then do like Puyol did. Don't join. Don't rejoin. Puyol had an offer to come back. I think it was a sporting director or whatever it was very recently. And he said, thank you very much, but no thank you. And that's what Valdés should have done, because honestly, he's just made a fool of himself for the last 3 months, to be honest.
Yeah, and I think the final point here is, again, the other weird undertone that Valdés, we can all admit, did a lot of things that were incorrect. And it is surprising that Valdés chose to come back under the current board. Because, again, this isn't a knock on the board or a knock on those retired legends, but it seems like a combination of Puyol and Xavi, and we thought Valdés, weren't really the biggest fans of the club. And I think, to go all the way back to Rick's question, that I think fans and not necessarily socios, but I think just fans at large tend to take the side, and they tend to support the retired legends in these arguments, right? When guys in suits who didn't really ever play on the field, it's hard to know how much they care and love the club. And I think that does bias our opinion a little bit, that we wind up, you know, we know that Xavi has bled, and he would have died for that, the crest. He would have died for the badge. And so we know, same thing with Puyol. Every 90 minutes, the guy was willing to kill himself for Barcelona. So we got to see firsthand what the club meant to those guys. And so we can't really see what the club means to guys in suits who are just, you know, a lifetime either non-football guys, whether they're, you know, more into politics or more into the financial side of things. But we don't really know how much the suits believe in the crest and believe in all those things. We just think that they can get a paycheck. So without being able to see how much the guys that we've put in charge of the club, being the board members, until we see how much they care, which there's really no way of doing, we almost have to have a faith that they want what's best for the club, in the way that retired legends, we almost instinctively understand that they obviously want what's best for Barcelona, right? Right? It's this odd, odd undertone.
Yep, agreed.
So where we're going to finish up here is just a quick discussion. It's not our Ernesto Valverde bashing that we're going to be doing, but there is this, over the international break, you always see a conversation happening about, and this was in sport, that Ernesto Valverde, he's had 14 La Masia debuts under him, which is a great number, and we applaud that number. It's awesome that he's looking at some of the youth players and giving them an opportunity. However, I want to read those 14 names for you, Frances, starting with Jose Manuel Arnaiz, who signed from Real Valladolid. He's now with Leganés. Marco Correa, we talked about him before in this show. He's been loaned out to Eibar and Getafe, since debuting for Barcelona. Oriol Busquets, who's now with Twente in Holland, out on loan. And David Costas, who came over on loan from Celta de Vigo and is back after Barcelona did not pick up his option to sign him permanently. Riqui Puig, no need to be said more about him. Juan Miranda, who is now on that 2-year loan to Schalke. Chumi, who is still with Barcelona B. Jorge Cuenca, same thing with Barcelona B. Musa Vague, who, as we know, is in the first team, but he hasn't played yet this season after being promoted to the first team. Alex Callado, who has made a few appearances and is currently one of the best players of Barcelona B still. Álvaro Ruiz, same thing, is starting for Barca B, but has yet to really feature too much for the first team other than a few occasional offers to play. And then Carlos Perez, who came up this season, but he did make his debut last year. And finally, we rounded out with this year's Ansu Fati and Ronald Araujo. Now, when I went through that entire list here, 14 players, and you got names like Puig, you've got names like Vague, Perez, Fati, Araujo this year, and going back to Cucurella and Oriol Busquets, you did have some of the bigger names in La Masia and guys that we believed were going to be first-team players. But the counter-argument into this is, look at those 14 players, right? That even though they made their debuts, did they really get to feature, or have they made that step up to the first team? And the answer across the board is no. Even Carlos Perez, who looks like he's been the closest, and Fati looks like he will eventually be, you know, guaranteed. I think he's the number one coming out of this whole list, even above Puig, because Puig has yet to really feature at all. Hasn't featured this year yet. We'll see him in Copa del Rey, but it means that he has the same role in the first team that he did last year if he's just appearing in Copa del Rey matches. So, you know, the argument here is that Valverde, that number 14 looks awful great, If you don't integrate any of these players fully into the first team, then I don't think that's what we're applauding. I think it should be we can applaud Valverde for, or any manager at Barcelona, right? That's why the difference is we give compliments to Pep Guardiola, because he not only did he give debuts, but Busquets and Pedro became full-time players, right? They became important features of that team. So I think the jury will not be out on how many debuts Valverde gives, but instead how many players wind up making the full step up to the first team. Because even Vague at the moment doesn't count because he is with the first team, but that was just contractual. He had to move up to the first team when they signed him, and now he's not playing and probably going to go out on loan in January.
Yep, and it's whether you do it for the right reasons or you don't. I mean, if I could have been appointed manager tomorrow and I could beat that record in two matches, just put the whole of Barça B and Juvenila in the next two matches, you got 30 new players, you know? The list and the number doesn't mean anything.
And no wins. I don't think you have any wins from that one either, Frances.
You don't know. You never know. Maybe not in the first month, but, you know, if you trust Barça B for a while, they would become good players. I'll tell you that. But the thing is, It's what you say, it's about the quality rather than quantity, you know? It looks like Fati is going to be one to stay. I think he's still got a couple of years to actually be a regular, sort of even coming off the bench. But, you know, that's me probably being too conservative for everyone's liking, but I think that's what reality would be. I think that Riqui Puig he's been left in Barça B for a reason, and he's too mature and to grow in strength, and more than that in terms of composure. Also, the fact that there are, seven or eight midfielders in Barca's first team that all really want to play. Like, in terms of, you know, Rakitic isn't even seeing much playing time. So adding Puig to that mix would be counterproductive. He wouldn't play. And he would be experiencing what Wague is experiencing now. So
and Alenia. Alenia is a big name here, right? That Alenia is
an X-Files. Yeah, Alenia is the X-Files. We don't really know what's happening with him. He's like he's gone to Stranger Things in the Upside Down sort of thing that I've been watching lately. So there you go. It's a bit of a reference for geeks. But anyway, don't know what's happening with him. But Riqui Puig, I think, is just having a consolidation season in Barça B, and I don't think that's a bad idea, to be honest, especially if he's not going to start and feature. So out of those 14, I think Valverde has done it more out of need than anything. Like every time he's called up, like Cucurella, it's because someone was injured. When he called up Arnaiz, it's because no one was working. No one was doing what they were meant to do. And he just used that as a resort. I think with Abel Ruiz, it's different. Abel Ruiz is one of what we said in the previous conversation, one of the protected ones that should be making it. And if Abel Ruiz has made the debut for the first team, he's more on that than on actual merit, to be honest, based on his performances. Not for Spain, because he's great for Spain and in the under-19s and 17s. But everyone has debuted for different reasons, but I think the ones to stay are Fati for sure and Puig hopefully in a year as well.
Yeah, I agree. Abel Ruiz, I have to make mention, he's been playing better with the B team this season. And I just, again, want to remind people that he was basically the youngest at all these different age groups. And even when he made his debut for Barcelona, the A team, he was younger than his generation with Callado and Puig. He is still, again, the younger version of that alongside, you know, back in the day when it was Sergio Gomes, who left for Borussia Dortmund and is now on loan at Huesca because things didn't necessarily work out for him either. So just saying, like, leaving the club for all those players, and we've talked about that before, that just because these top prospects have left doesn't mean that their careers have turned out exactly as it would have been. So, you know, you never know with any of these young players, with any of these teenagers. But as I said, there is an expectation for me, hopefully, that whether it's Valverde or any manager, that I want to compliment him on who he can integrate and not necessarily who he just hands out 14 minutes to. And finally, I want to say that Ronald Araujo, it was a tough break against Sevilla getting that red card. But I like what he's done. It took him a while, just like Louis Barry coming over from West Brom, who's just going to debut. And that's actually a tough break for Victor Valdez, where they get this 16-year-old striker from West Brom, Louis Barry, who's supposed to be your number nine. He was supposed to be the guy. He winds up scoring a bunch of goals in the preseason, but because of his paperwork, couldn't play. So Victor Valdez is, for all of his matches, we never even saw him get to play his traditional number nine striker. Instead, it was another player that actually signed in the offseason in Gerard Fernandez. But nevertheless, you don't get to play with your top striker out there ever, and then you already lost your job. So I think that says all you need to say about Victor Valdez, and I think that's a good place to end this show as well. So thanks so much for tuning in. Again, you can tap in your app and check out the show notes to subscribe. You can find us on social media too. We're on Twitter at the Barcelona Pod or at HiltonD13 for me, on Instagram at the Barcelona Pod. Our closed Facebook group that usually gives us our listener questions, that's tbpod.link/group. You can also find us on Patreon, where we do all of our quick take match reviews, where those are about 15 to 20 minutes in length, and that is just a breakdown of the match that just happened. As you know, on the show, we don't really do exact match reviews. We do more big, broad topics here. You can also find us on YouTube, where we continue those conversations about those big, broad topics. This week is more on Victor Valdez. That is the Barcelona Podcast. That's easy to find on YouTube. And if you need any of this content, if you're looking for anything related to anything, including articles separate from that, I had one about Jean-Claire Todibo yesterday, that is at barcelblog.com. So check out the subscription buttons, go to the website barcelblog.com. You can find everything you need there. And thanks so much for listening to this, the Barcelona Podcast. Until next time, I'll talk to you soon, and Forza Barça.
Forza.
Guys, this year for Christmas, give her the next best thing to wearing nothing at all with soft, silky Nudies pajamas available exclusively at Pajamagram.com. Sensuous and smooth, Nudies pajamas feel just like her own bare skin. Nudies is so seductive, she'll love the feeling of wearing next to nothing at all, and you'll love the way they look. Includes free gift packaging and delivery by Christmas is guaranteed. So visit pajamagram.com today. That's pajamagram.com.
They call you the grill master. You've seared the thickest porterhouse in the butcher shop. And as you lift that first forkful to your mouth, you savor the moment. To get amazing offers during the Mercedes-Benz summer event, like the 2019 C-Class sedan and GLC SUV, the perfect recipes of driving performance. Plus, you can enjoy 6 months of Sirius XM All Access included. The Mercedes-Benz summer event, now serving limited time offers on a select lineup of vehicles. Offers end September 3rd. Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.